It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are both sitting here in the studio, stuffed to the gills, as you might expect from yesterday. Had a big gathering with the local family over, and they all stepped up and brought things and made it not only fun, but not that bad for work and all. And I did notice, through the course of a day, an awful lot of consumption was going on.
I did my fair share.
We can always count on you.
Mm-hmm.
Never let us know.
I'm always good for it.
And I hope everybody had as good a time as we did. And now, time to kick back a little bit and get real serious about the fact that it's almost the holidays, the big holiday, and people are kind of crazy out there. But we need it, I guess. The retailers of the world are very, very happy if people keep showing up. I don't know where they were going this morning on Butler, but they were sure going to get there in a hurry. Moving. Anyway, welcome back to all the locals. Thanks for always being there, all the regulars, because we count on you. And if you're new to the show, either you just hit it by accident or somebody told you about it, try to stick around for the whole hour. We'll talk about all kinds of fun things, all of which will be what we want to talk about, unless you've got a subject you'd like to cover, comment, question, anything about money, which is just about anything in the world these days. So just give us a call, 904-222-8255, and you will get on the air immediately or so, and we'll talk about what you want to talk about. So we had a short week because of the holiday, and Friday was about a half a day, and the whole thing came together without too much problem, and we made a little money. Where's it going? I'm still not sure. I would love to say this whole thing's over and it's coming back, and we can't say that yet because we haven't really crossed the big barriers yet. But it's looking somewhat, I guess, a little bit buoyant. Adam may disagree. He tends to be a little bit more pessimistic than I do overall, but I think we're both on the same page that we're cautiously optimistic.
I guess you could say that. It was a shortened holiday week. We had one day off and then a half day on Friday, I believe. The market did pretty well. It was on really small volume. The S&P is edging its way closer to the 200-day moving average. And the last time this happened was in August. Had a really nice run up in July. Pretty strong buying in July. And the market got really close to crossing its 200-day moving average, and then the 8%+ inflation report started coming out along with 75 basis point rate hikes, and the market went into free fall mode again. So this time there's still headwinds for the market, but I really doubt we see any more 8%+ inflation readings, and I really think we're done with 75 basis point rate hikes. So what is the market worried about today? It's worried about recession. The economic data is telling us that it's pretty much all but a certainty that in the next 12 months, we're going to see a recession. We see it in the yield curve. It's inverted at many of the key points that are extremely reliable predictors of recession. We're starting to see it in the jobs data, too. It seems like there's not a week goes by that we don't see a hiring freeze or layoffs in the tech sector. Initial jobless claims ticked up to 240,000 this week. That's just under the important 250,000 level.
That's been sneaking up on the magic 250 a little too quickly.
Yep, it's the highest level we've seen since August. Jobless claims should be trending lower due to holiday hiring, but we're seeing the opposite happen right now. And then continuing claims are at historically low levels, but they're also trending in the wrong direction. During the past 6 weeks, they've jumped over 13%, and that is consistent with all prior recessions, that type of movement in the continuing claims data. So what does that mean for you and the stock market? The answer, as usual, is it depends. We all remember what 2008 was like. That was a long, deep recession. It was really painful. Most recessions are not that level of awful. We saw recessions in 2001 and in the early 1990s that were much shorter and less severe. We recently saw two quarters of negative growth in the first half of this year. In the third quarter, we saw the GDP return to growth, but the stock market is already off between 5.5% this year for the Dow, or if you look at the NASDAQ, 28.2%. The four largest companies in the U.S. are Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon. Their stocks are down 29.4% year-to-date on average, and they have lost $2.6 trillion of market cap.
Ouch.
Despite that, the rest of the market is starting to look a little bit better. Over 87% of stocks are now trading above their 50-day moving averages, and more than 60% are above their 200-day moving averages. That is, we're still in a longer-term downtrend, but that breadth was not there in the July rally. So that's pretty encouraging. Interest rates are pretty high, with the 30-year mortgage recently rising to over 7% and causing mortgage applications to fall to their lowest level since the late 1990s. I'm not listing these things to scare people, but I'm kind of asking the question, are we already in this recession that everything is predicting? We saw the GDP two consecutive quarters. I think we had a recession or are in a recession currently. And I wouldn't be surprised if this quarter went negative or next quarter went negative. So
yeah, and
would
I'm not
that
so
be
sure that last reading of up whatever it was 2.5 or whatever, that there were some kind of unusual blips in that one. Mm. And yeah, technically, it takes us out of recession, but technically, it could dump us right back in.
I still think things have not been great this year.
No.
So I still kind of suspect that we're closer to the end of the slump than the beginning. Although if you listen to the media, next year is just going to be awful. I don't know if I agree with that.
Well, what are they going to say? The Republicans won the House. They can't just say, oh, everything's going to get better.
They were saying that before that happened. Not everything is hinging on the election that just happened.
It is for a lot of the media.
I don't know about that. They've been saying this for quite a while now, long before anything was settled in the 6-week election counting that we just saw. The other positive sign right now is that some things that were really bad last year are actually getting better. Gas prices have fallen 28% from their peak. They're still much higher than they should be, but they're not as burdensome as they have been recently. Delivery times are falling for almost all shipping, both domestic and international. Mortgage rates have actually fallen a half a point from their high, and home builder numbers actually look decent in recent months with those mortgage rates coming back a little bit and people getting used to the new interest rates and sort of factoring that into their home buying decisions. There's nothing you can do about it at this point. If you want a mortgage, you have to pay the going rate. So,
yep.
And you're also seeing builders lower prices off those extremely high prices that we saw 6 months ago. So the combination is actually pushed home builder stocks up in the last 6 months.
You might be able to find something with an owner financing thing on it. That would be attractive to a lot of people right now.
Yeah, but typically for owner financing, you pay more than the going mortgage rate. So I don't know if that's a great option right now.
Depends if they want income or price.
We're also seeing the dollar weakening, and that's allowing goods that are produced domestically to be sold overseas. So that's
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it really got too high there for a little while. So that's been a positive as well. So as has been the theme this year, there are two sides to everything. There's a positive and a negative, and it's really hard to figure out. But my personal opinion is we're more than halfway through this bear market.
I agree with that. And I'd say probably even more than that. There are so many things that could yet go wrong, and you're seeing some of it in China right now. And if we take a lesson out of this year since the early days of COVID, it's going to have to do with China. We're going to talk about that a lot more when we get back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have a trivia question, as usual, sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. I was a bit surprised this morning a few minutes ago when I asked Adam to check the number of exchange-traded funds, or ETFs, that are currently available to trade in the market. My information was a little bit old. I remember when I first started in this business about 21 years ago, they were starting, there were 100, 150 maybe. And I've watched the growth of that, and the new companies coming in, new ETFs by the same companies and so on. And it got to 1,500 a few years ago, and then it was creeping up around 16, 1650. So I asked him today, because I hadn't looked it up for a while, there are 3,030 ETFs currently traded on the exchanges. My question for today is, what percentage of those ETFs showed a profit for the first 9 months of this miserable year? So some percentage of these 3,030 ETFs that are profitable through 9 months, and it's under 100%. How's that? Pretty accurate, right?
Really helpful.
All right, what do you think from your standpoint for next week in the market?
Gosh, I think we have to probably see a test of the 200-day moving average. I won't even venture to guess what will happen with
failure or success one way or the
other. Yeah, that's it'll be interesting. But obviously light trading this week, I think you're going to see heavy trading next week. So I think the test will be for real. If we cross it and get another day, I would be pretty excited about that.
You and me?
I'm not saying that I think that will happen, but I would be happy if it did.
The Fed is doing some pretty harsh jawboning.
I don't understand. I think it's maybe just covering their bases in case they feel like they have to do a 50-point hike. I don't expect that, but I don't know. Their forecasts have been, whatever they say, just do the opposite. It's pretty much how good their forecasts are.
Yeah, or as it was compared in our morning research today, a high school student with a Ouija board could do better than they do. That's the truth.
They're pretty terrible.
Yeah, they got a couple of problems. And I think one of the big ones over and over and over is they wait too long to get started. They're afraid of failure somehow, so they don't get started. So then it races away and they fail. And trying to protect themselves from failing causes them to fail. So then what happens at the top? We got to do something. And then, of course, you see all this wild stuff that's been going on for the second half of this year, jumping up three quarters at a time over and over. But there's only 6 weeks between meetings. And the problem is that they don't seem to realize the most fundamental rule of economics is that policy change takes time. Just because a rate goes up one day, everybody in the country that's doing projects doesn't stop doing them.
And nor do they even realize an increase in their interest rate on them. They've probably already taken out the loan.
It's all set up, or they funded it with bonds or something like that. So they don't react right away. So the number comes in a month later, and, oh, my God, it hasn't collapsed yet. We got to do this again. Mm-hmm. And they do it over and over and over. We could well be way too high as we speak right now, and they're jawboning about doing more. I don't remember what the date is, but coming up this next month.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, Phil.
Good morning, gentlemen. And I stuffed myself also. I like to take a guess at the number, and then I have a short tribute to Adam and Stephen and your team of gold.
Well,
I want to say, if you allow, I want to say 13%.
Well, 13%, you're kind of a pessimist, aren't you? Or a realist, maybe.
I don't have as many investments in gurus like you guys are, but I'm involved with a lot of pension funds and everything in international, and I observe more than I invest in because I'm very cautious at my late age. But yes, in this, it's probably 20-30% higher, but I'm going to be...
No, actually, you're too high.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I won't say what I was going to say then because my first gut feeling was probably right. Can I do my tribute?
Absolutely.
Okay. Tribute to Adam Stephen Van Wheat. 'Tis 2 days after Thanksgiving and all through the financial house. Adam and Stephen, financial gurus, are even on their mouse, bringing up their computers and carefully scanning our financial globe in all financial assets, as we have been told. Their radio show and guidance, professionals by far, Adam and Stephen will always recommend whom shouldn't reach for the stars. Financial that is steady and soon to rise is the best advice, which Adam and Stephen will always say should give you no surprise. A tribute to your team of financial extraordinaires. We listeners and myself, old Phil from Orange Park, really enjoyed your when your show is on the air. Thank you immensely from the bottom of our hearts, Professor.
Well, thank you.
And that was awesome.
Thanksgiving. Yep.
That was great.
Poetry on a Saturday morning.
I know.
How about that?
And I made that up an hour before your show, so I didn't do that.
Fantastic.
We appreciate it.
We sure
do. Don't mention turkey and stuffing and ham, please, for at least a couple of days. I have a refrigerator full of stuff people brought in. Oh, man, I wish my boatyard was closer. I'd be giving it to everybody in the refrigerators. But
I can hear you.
Take care.
Thanks, Phil.
Yeah.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah,
How often do you get read poetry?
I am glad he's writing the poetry and not me, because that is not one of my talents.
Yeah, it's not something I like either. Anyway, just a quick wrap-up on the Fed. If you recall, a month ago maybe, I had a note in my daily stack, I guess, about the chief of the Fed in San Francisco. And she said, well, yes, inflation is very high, but actually I have all the money I need, so it's okay.
Oh, that should be the barometer, definitely.
Yeah, exactly. Now, if you don't believe these people are out of touch, they don't know you, they don't know us, they don't know anyone like any of us. They hang around their Eiffel Towers in places like San Francisco and Wyoming in their meetings, and they never, ever have to face reality, and that is a problem. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. How do I follow Phil?
Well, you could sing.
Good morning to you on this cloudy day.
Just a thought.
With sales everywhere.
Yep.
Cyber Monday's coming up pretty soon, too.
Yeah, and while we're on this briefly, remember, everybody, this is Small Business Saturday. And the whole concept of Small Business Saturday is stop in at a local store instead of a chain and do our local merchants some good today.
Mm-hmm. They certainly need it, because if the big box stores are extending their Black Friday sales today, my wife is in the living room shopping right now, then you know that the local guys may be hurting too.
Absolutely. So help them out, everybody. That includes restaurants and everything else.
Yes, God bless the local people. Without them, this economy would tank totally.
Exactly.
Hey, I want to see if you guys have any advice. I've got several hundred shares of Johnson & Johnson sitting around, and as you know, next year they break up into two companies. Mm-hmm. What has been your experience when that happens? Their consumer business is only about 16% of their total revenue, and they're spinning that off. And what I see in the news is they're investing heavily in the medical side. Do you think that's a spinoff to jettison that at some point? Or, you know, but what's been your experience when a company breaks up like that? I know the AT&T broke up years ago, and that's probably one of the bigger ones that we've seen.
But, Standard Oil also.
Yeah,
Standard Oil. Yep.
I've seen it go every which way in terms of results. Many times it's spun off because, there's a bunch of reasons that can happen. One is that it's forced by some antitrust or the government entity. Not the case here. Sometimes they feel that the businesses are so unrelated that they'd be better off with separate management. Sometimes they feel that the market isn't valuing a portion of their business correctly, and so they spin it off to capture that value. And in fact, that happened with one of our somewhat large holdings quite a while ago. And oh my gosh, did that spinoff take off? It's up probably 500% since the spinoff. So
and it was getting no play in the value of the parent company. So they spun it off, and now everybody's got lots more money than they used to.
Yeah.
I think the medical side is the side that's being held back by the consumer, especially you know, with the money that goes to consumer that could go into medical. So I'm wondering whether I should jettison ahead of the spinoff and buy back later. You know, I don't know.
It depends on your tax.
If I had a crystal ball, I'd be happy.
Yeah, it depends on your tax situation. If you're talking about an IRA where it's unimportant, then you don't have to think about these things. But if those shares are held in a tax-paying account, then you got to worry about your cost basis.
Exactly.
That is true. All right, guys. It's been a great stock, though. You look at the annualized returns, 3 years over almost 12%, 10 years over 12%. So, and up positive this year. So it's been, even with the whichever side is holding the other one back, it's still been a great holding.
Well, right after the break, yeah, I got
the dividend is always very good, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right after the break, I've got a couple of stories about those things that are kind of interesting, and there's a few facts that people will be surprised to hear, I'm sure. Well, we appreciate it. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving, and we appreciate the phone call. You want? Did you guess? No, you haven't guessed on that trivia yet. You got 5 seconds. You want to shoot out a number?
8%.
Eight, too high. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
All right, we'll be right back. This is the Vanway Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Vanway Financial Hour. I'm Steve Vanway.
And I'm Adam Vanway.
Trivia question's still out there, and we really got it bracketed for you now. Out of the 3,030 exchange-traded funds that are currently being traded in the marketplace, a small percentage of those have been profitable for the first 9 months of this year, and we know that 8% is too high. Now, that is a lot bigger bracket than you had a few minutes ago. So if anybody wants to give that a shot, there you go. All right, we're talking about essentially this is a situation where the whole is not equal to the sum of its parts. Talking about splitting companies and so on. We got a couple examples. A lot of people do not know that when John D. Rockefeller made most of his money from oil, it was after the breakup of Standard Oil. That's when things really took off, because they, by diversifying and changing some names and going to different places geographically, it just got better and better and better. But there's a couple others too. There was a company back in the Reagan era that was W.R. Grace, is it?
Mm-hmm.
The Grace Company.
That's correct.
And they were testing a theory about horizontal integration. And for those of you who aren't familiar with the big corporations, horizontal integration means you own a bunch of things that are not related to each other. Vertical integration means you start buying up all the components that go into your final product. The Grace was the biggest example of horizontal diversification. It was just basically creating a conglomerate out of a bunch of pieces they were buying up. And the stock sat there and sat there and sat there and did nothing, nothing, nothing. So they split it up. And now you'll see remnants. Like Adam's familiar with one of the remnants of this company, and it's quite an impressive remnant, you might say.
Yeah, well, it actually has the name of W.R. Grace. And in my former life, I dealt with them a lot. They sell all sorts of chemicals and additives to the concrete and for that building materials industry. And they're quite large.
Yeah. That turned out, for the Grace Company itself, in a very financially astute move, I think. There were some others, too, that were along the same lines where they split them up and some things prospered a lot. You never really know. I am not qualified by any means to look at a company and say, okay, when you split it in two, this is what's going to happen to A and this is what's going to happen to B.
No.
But you can bet one thing for sure. One of them will outperform the other one.
Absolutely. And I personally don't like the retail side. It's just a more competitive environment.
It's a crowded space.
It's more cost sensitive and price sensitive on the consumer side. I guess we're using the example of if you are buying contact lenses and the generic is 40% cheaper than the name brand, it's pretty tempting. If you are going to get a heart valve, and your doctor says this is the best one out there, you're going to get that one.
Exactly.
And you don't care what it costs, especially with insurance. So it's just a tougher environment on the retail side.
I'd say on balance, through my lifetime, the things that I've watched do this, the vertical integration tends to be a lot more powerful than the horizontal integration.
I would agree with that. Very few companies that use horizontal integration are successful. It's difficult to manage. GE was one of the best run horizontally integrated companies. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they lost their famous CEO, it all went south. So, it's a much tougher thing than if you are vertically integrated and all your business units are working towards the same goal.
And speaking of Bob Nardelli, which well, we sort of were because he was one of the big five at GE. Adam had some experience with Home Depot when Bob took it over, and Home Depot had purchased things that hardly anybody even remembered that they owned.
That's true.
You were there. Tell us what happened.
That was just one of the very small problems. The problem at Home Depot was that they had let all the stores basically run themselves differently throughout the history of Home Depot. And when you get to a certain size, that's great when you're trying to serve a local market with a mom and pop shop. But when you're trying to scale and take advantage of economies of scale, it turns out that's a really horrible thing. And then you try and change the way things have been going for the last 20 years and your managers all revolt. And it was just a really, really rough time at Home Depot. Bob didn't last very long there. But he really put the wheels in motion for that company to turn around and become what they are today. So I think he did a great job. But if you asked anyone who was there at that time, you might get a different answer.
I'd almost promise that.
Yeah.
Full disclosure, we both have known Nardelli for years and years and years, and he did go on to greater things. I see him frequently on TV channels.
He's very well respected now, despite the turmoil that happened at Home Depot. Mm-hmm.
But look at Home Depot's stock now.
I know. That's
wow.
I think he had a lot to do with that.
I think he did, too. He's very well, very underrated. He stepped out of the frying pan and into the fire. He was the first non-family CEO. So he ran it like a non-family CEO. And boy, did he get a lot of resentment for that. But you know, you push on. I was buying their stock back 20 years ago for 17. Look at it today, 300 something. I don't know if that includes any splits along the way.
Can't remember.
But it's a nice improvement. Anyway. All right. Again, trivia questions still open, and the lines are open, 904-222-8255. All right, my weekly Secure Act update.
It is getting down to the wire, and it is really starting to annoy me.
Count the days that these people are working between now and December 31, and you don't need many hands to do that, but they're getting pressure from everybody. Now, some of these names may not mean anything to you, but a lot of them will. People pushing for the passage include the Insured Retirement Institute. You can read that as the annuities. American Council of Life Insurers, Allianz Life Insurance Company of North America, American Benefits Council, and the American Retirement Association. Now, you know how big insurance companies have these big, shiny buildings, as our friend Stan, the annuity man, says, they didn't get those big, shiny buildings by giving anything away. And they are pushing really hard on Secure 2.0 because it's going to make the process of offering annuities in retirement accounts a lot easier. Now, there's a lot of people that can't resist that kind of push. But then again, there are some other people who want it too, who are just basically political, and they want it for differing reasons. That includes Pelosi, Schumer, McConnell, Kevin McCarthy. Everybody basically on both sides of the aisle wants to get this done. And the reason that some of them want it is they're retiring and they want their name on the legislation because they really believe that it's going to be helpful to people, as do I, and I would fight for it very hard. But then along come the usual group of idiots, and they keep trying to insert things in here that are going to make the reconciliation process harder and harder. Will it pass? You know the difference, people, between a forecast and a prediction? You can use this on weather or anything else. Your forecast includes 100% of the range of possibilities. It goes from dry to soaking wet, so to speak. But the forecast, it might be a little cloudy on this one, but when you make a prediction, for instance, if you're the weatherman, I predict that it will not rain in your town tomorrow or whatever. Well, my forecast is very broad on this, but my prediction is it will pass this year. And when it does, some of us who are waiting on various and sundry other provisions of it, I will be sure to let everybody know, delay your required minimum minimum distributions if you were born after June 30th, 1949, for just a few more days, and we'll have a good idea of what's going to happen. So that's the Secure 2.0 update for today, which doesn't sound a whole bunch different than the Secure 2.0 update from last time.
It really doesn't, and that's getting very frustrating.
Yeah, it certainly is. Not time to cover anything big. You got any little quick notes you want to shoot out to people?
Let's see here. I had a couple of things. We saw new single-family home sales increase 7.5% in October.
Surprise.
And, yeah, I was surprised to see that. And I'd mentioned that home builders' stocks had been rising. It's almost like the market predicted this, as it is apt to do.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You put all those people who individually might not be all that brilliant, you put them all together and put a bunch of money in their hands, and they get it right frequently.
Almost all the time, yeah.
All right, one more break. We'll be back for the last segment. I think we have a good one coming. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I think we have a call coming in, but a quick note. Some of you might be familiar with the Consumer Finance Protection Board. It was created as part of Dodd-Frank in 2010. And it is an absolute masterpiece of what should not be done at the government level. First off, it wasn't assigned to any government department. It was assigned to the Federal Reserve. A judge just looked at that recently and said, no, that is not part of the Constitution. The Fed is not an official part of the U.S. government. This is not going to stand. And since it was the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren, she, of course, is throwing a hissy fit, probably sending smoke signals up her chimney, distress signals. But I digress. We've got to talk a little bit about what's going on in China. I'm sure everybody has seen some of the unrest over there, and it has been for a couple of reasons. Now, what's happening to China now is much of their own making. Xi has taken a very hard line on the whole, I guess ever since COVID started and Omicron itself, and they are daily now experiencing record new cases. And they're barring people in their homes. They're sending people off to work in places like the Foxconn factory, and they won't let them go home. So they even have been known to weld the doors shut so they can't get out, and some people have died in fires because they couldn't exit the building. Now they're rioting in the streets, and they're being met with a pretty heavy-handed resistance. And part of the reason they have this problem is because they do not allow any of the vaccines to be used on their own citizens unless it's the Chinese vaccine.
Yeah, what if the vaccine's really done? I mean,
I don't know for sure that it's the big thing or not. But anyway, this is what heavy government looks like. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning, gentlemen. Great show as always.
Thanks so much. What's up?
I have two things. Obviously, I was going to take a shot at the trivia question. But first, I'd like to say I appreciate you guys talking about Elizabeth Holmes last week and recall the memory of when Cramer had her on his show and just praised her up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got me to thinking, does anybody ever hold this guy to any kind of accountability? I mean, because he's wrong like 80% of the time, but everybody just loves the guy.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
You're not wrong.
And he's got another example from recent history, too, in the crypto world.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Big buddies.
I mean, if he were a weather forecaster or an umpire, he'd be out of work a long time ago.
That's really saying something.
Yeah, no kidding.
So true.
As far as the trivia question goes, yeah. I have listened to you guys for a few years, and I have a sense this is your kind of humor. I'm going to say 0%.
Well, you're not wrong about the sense of humor, but that's too low.
Yeah, that would have been great. That would have been really funny if it was true, but no, not this time.
No.
We'll follow. We'll try again another time, then.
Okay, that's just great. We do appreciate the call. Thanks.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
And he's right about my sense of humor.
And he's right about Cramer, too. But yeah. He does, I mean, he's purely for entertainment. I mean, that is not a serious show. Clearly, normal people don't roll up their sleeves and jump on tables and talk about stocks.
No, so. In fact, when I was new in this business, people would ask me occasionally, well, do you watch Cramer? And I said, no, do you? And they'd usually say, yeah. I'd say, well, if I push my sleeves up and get up and jump up and down on the table, will you do business with me?
He did get one thing right, though. So in my former life, when I was working for a company called Rinker down in South Florida, mm-hmm. and it was in 2006, and we had the best positioned assets for selling rocks in Florida. And somehow we got on and we were publicly traded, and Cramer, we got on his radar, and he did this big thing on us. And at the end of it, he said, rocks in Florida, who knew? And after that, we actually got bought for a huge premium by a company called Cemex. And he nailed that one for sure. Made a lot of people a lot of money.
Well, you know, even Jim Dent is right.
Every once in a while.
Great while.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's see. He predicted the dot-com bust and Reagan's election. See, the most recent one that I can think of. Oh, yeah. On August 30th, he said, you have to sell your stocks now. You can't wait till September, October. You have to sell now. And that by the time it's over, which will take all the way to the end of 2023, the S&P 500 will be down 86%.
Oh, wow. That's a lot.
That's about 530.
Well, since then, the Dow is up about 20%. Mm-hmm. And S&P's up about 12. So that was a good call.
Yeah. It's Harry Dent. But anyway. He has predicted the crash of a lifetime every year that I have been aware of the fact that he exists. And I can't say that he's really nailed it just yet. So the question I always ask after telling people to consider the source is, what is he selling? And it's very simple. And I just saw the TV ad for it yesterday. His newsletter is $299 a year. Thank you very much. Please send money. Mm-hmm. There you go. So consider the source. All right. What do you think about this one? The House of Representatives is contemplating doing away with a couple of Social Security provisions that are, I'm quoting now, unpopular. Let me see now how popular these should be. One of them. Oh, no, both of them. Reduce benefits for workers who did not pay into Social Security. Hello? A lot of you out there have integrated plans where you might have worked for the railroad or some other large company with a pension plan, and it's an either-or. There's something called the Windfall Act or Windfall Elimination Provision, if you want to get technical, WEP. That reduces Social Security benefits of certain workers like teachers who receive pensions and don't pay Social Security. So they want to eliminate that. And I say, so you didn't pay in and they want to pay you full benefits. What? Who do you suppose the group is with which that is unpopular?
Probably the people that paid into the system.
Who knew?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the college student loan forgiveness. Who do you think that's not popular with? People that paid their student loans.
One more little kicker on this thing. They want to make it retroactive to December 31, 2021.
Hmm.
Okay, people. Are we nuts out there? Yes. All right, back to China for a minute. The main iPhone plant in China is the Foxconn tech group plant. And they are in such turmoil that it's going to greatly interfere with the chain for Apple. Apple's actually doing some things about it. They're bringing a lot of their manufacturing over here, especially chips. There's a lot of chip factories being built right now. And it's going to help. And I hope that the people in this country are paying attention to that. For instance, the medicine types and these two things, coupling yourself to China is just not going to work well for our future because they have the ability now to cause shortages in things like, amoxicillin. Been hearing about that? Yeah. We never talked until the last couple of years about shortages of really important things. And what started the whole discussion was, of course, the COVID thing when we found out, oh my gosh, we don't make any of this stuff anymore. And it seemed like that was starting to take hold. Trump had been pushing for factories to come back here for a long time. And then this happened, which just highlighted the problem. But then we seem to be dropping that again. And now that this is happening over there, I am more or less thankful that the Chinese are having these problems, because it's leaving us with an impression that there's something really wrong. And there is something really wrong. So we got to get this stuff back onshore and get them up and running. So if it takes rioting in China to do it, God bless the Chinese, I say.
I heard the World Cup has a little bit to do with that, because they're allowed to watch the games and they're seeing the rest of the world living in relative normalcy.
Absolutely.
And it's not gone over real well.
Yeah, so just think of some people over there kicking back, putting on the TV and watching us sitting back at home, choking down a nice cold beer. They can't do that. Mm. That's crazy. I don't know. I could complain all day long, or I could just say, we had a wonderful holiday and a good time, and we'll be back here next week with all kinds of new goodies. And we hope that this week becomes a pivotal week in the market, and it actually gives us some base to build on. We'll let you know next week. All right, this is the Van Lee Financial Hour, signing off.